Barry Lopez, a well-known and highly respected author, will debut FM 89.1's web-based show, For the Pages. Lopez won the National Book Award in 1986 for his nonfiction book, Arctic Dreams, and was a finalist for the award in 1980. Lopez is Texas Tech's first Distinguished Visiting University Scholar. Visit kttz.org or download the NPR One app to stream the interview. So the writing that you do it in different fields or genres. You do fiction, nonfiction.
Right.
How do you balance those two, Barry?
I don't think about it. My imagination is a narrative imagination. It has an arc, and so I assemble pieces and disassemble pieces. But what I'm looking for is a story, a wholeness that I can present. My bedroom is adjacent to my studio, and if I pass that door on the way downstairs for breakfast and look at the typewriter, that could trigger a piece of fiction, which for me doesn't involve any research. So I'll just sit down. I have no idea where the story is going, but, you know, after a certain time in your life, there's a lot of stuff upstairs.
A lot of hard drive storage.
So, right. But for nonfiction, it's a much more research-driven process, and that means, of course, library and interviewing people, but my way has been to go to some place and stay there.
And you mentioned typewriter. Do you still work on a typewriter?
Yes, I still work at a typewriter. I see no advantage to going to computers. And people will say, well, you know, you can move paragraphs so easily. And I will say, but I don't move paragraphs. And I think, not to disparage the whole enterprise of people working at computers, but I think the computer encourages you to move from notes to narrative too quickly. It has to marinate what's going on up there. And so by the time I sit down at the typewriter, without knowing it, a lot of stuff has been processed. And I know this is not something that will be in that story, so it just is gone before I sit down.
Where did your love for books, storytelling, reading, writing come from? Was it to help you to cope with what happened in your childhood?
No, I don't think it has. You know, I was like all kids. I did a bunch of stuff. I was really interested in the indoor-outdoor thing. What goes on inside and what goes on outside. And I was very comfortable outside in rural Southern California. And I had a lot of, I'm sure, highly imagined relationships with animals. I flew pigeons, and those pigeons were an externalization of my enthusiasm for being alive. So my background really isn't so much in books as it is in experience, experiential knowledge in the world.
Which is why you would go to places and live there for a while.
Yeah, live is too big a word. You know, I'd be in a place for, you know, 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I was on a ship once for 68 days. So it's not living there. I've been living in the same house in Oregon, in the rainforest there, temperate zone rainforest, for 49 years now. But I love being there. If somebody would say, well, you know, you've been to 70 some countries, and where do you want to go after this, or where do you want to go back to? I would always say, to my home, because that's the place I've had the longest conversation with. Who are you? This is me. The antiphonal relationship with a place is part of what makes you feel at home. And I found a place early on and just stayed there.
Well, if it works, why change it, right?
Right.
What question do you wish that someone would ask you about your writing, but nobody has? And could you answer that?
I don't think about being interviewed. There's nothing in me that responds to wanting to tell somebody who I am or what I do. I mean, in a situation like this, I'm glad to talk with you, but this is a personal conversation. And the last thing I think of is, well, we're going to talk about Barry. I don't think, oh, I wish somebody would ask me this question or that question. It's whatever is going on in you that I can respond to, then that's interesting to me.
Okay. Do you write more by logic or intuition or some combination of the two? And is that, would you call that a summary of your writing process?
No, I think that I write by intuition. I guess I would go that far, but I rewrite in a more logical fashion. If you can imagine a degree of immersion, in the beginning, it's all intuitive to me. But I'm sure there's an organizing principle up here, if you will, an organizing pattern that I work with. But as I come up into the place where I'm actually thinking about what I'm writing, then I'm apt to say to myself, this doesn't really fit here. Maybe it doesn't fit at all, and maybe it fits at the end or something. So I have that conversation that's more conscious. I said to a person once, if I found myself thinking, I would know I wasn't writing, because there's something going on in a non-literate world that feeds into the literate world. And that's that bridge that I'm standing on when I'm trying to write.
So writing sounds very similar to a spiritual practice for you.
I would say yes, but I guess I might add to clarify that writing is a way of life for me. It's not a career. I'm not interested in teaching writing. The way I make my way in the world, the way I survive, is writing. So it's a practice. That's probably a better word. It's my practice.
Kind of like the medical community is not a profession. It's a practice. So you're always looking to hone it and shape it better or
I'm looking to learn. I have historically been, some people would refer to me as a lyrical writer who is concerned about large issues bearing on the nature of one's hope. But I'm interested now in working with forms of writing that are completely unfamiliar to me. I'm more engaged with that idea than, God forbid, doing the same thing again.
Okay. From an interview you gave a couple years ago, maybe just a year ago, you said about what we should be doing now to comfort the wounded and undermine the strategies of the selfish.
Yes.
Do you have a couple or three suggestions for us?
You know, that at this moment has, I realized that at the end of talks that I give of whatever it is, I always ask members of the audience to take care of each other. And the reason for that is that we have become so obsessed with the importance of the individual in our culture, in the cultural West, that we've forgotten you can't build anything that way. You have to have a profound awareness of other people and have impulses toward courtesy and affection. Otherwise, nothing will come together. And I'm saying that based on exposure to a lot of people who are completely different from you and me. They're culturally so distinct that there's very little crossover here. And so the question has to come up, who are the people that have survived the longest? Who are those who have developed strategies and implemented them such that they've been here for culturally intact for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30,000 years. It's not us. We're flying apart all the time. We have a very high divorce rate, a very high rate of people falling out of whatever practice they go into. The levels of commitment are, in our culture, I think, are much weaker than they are in some traditional cultures.
And we also don't value generations of families looking out for one another as time passes.
Yeah. That's, you know, a primary difference between a culture like ours and traditional cultures is we tend to watch for somebody who's saying, follow me. And traditional cultures tend to think, what can we do that will leave no one behind? Let's take care of everybody, because a social plan that doesn't take care of everybody, that marginalizes people on the basis of race or gender or whatever the characteristic is that's going to be the breaking bar, tend to founder. And that's why I say to people, for God's sake, take care of each other, because in the end, it's not about you, it's about us. And it's also why I'm not interested. I want to write in a way that allows other women and men to read and to feel that they now have a better sense of who they are and what they want to do.
In the conversations with Barry Lopez, that I think Kurt did a review of the book, there was something in here that was quoted. It says, do I help make the world safe and beautiful by what I do? Do you feel that the way people make a living these days follows to an answer to that question?
I don't know. I think a lot of people end up making a living doing something they hate. We've built that kind of culture. It's a consumer culture. And in order to consume what you feel compelled, socially compelled to do, you've got to have money. So you end up doing things that you're not really committed to. You spend every day looking for a way out. I think the idea that you should be satisfied to make people feel safer or understood or embraced rather than judged, that's pretty much what everybody wants. I mean, how many people are frightened of love because they know too much about rejection? So if you can make a world in which a person doesn't feel they will be humiliated if they express love for something, I think that's good.